Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 38 of Game On with Cody and John. On this episode's Big Deal, Group Therapy. We'll discuss the fun and challenges of starting and being a part of a game group. And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, Campaign Manager 2008. Will you say yes we can or no I can't to this election game? All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John. Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana.
I was going to say, the
snow is on the ground and there's a hush. There's a hush in the air because our Indianapolis Colts, not victorious in Super Bowl 44.
No, we were not that.
We were apparently not that, yeah.
But I swear to you, if I hear "who dat" one more time, I'm going to strangle someone.
I have a friend at work who is a huge Cincinnati Bengals fan. He said that next year they need to get there so it can be "who day" instead of "who dat."
Well, I'll be looking forward to that.
So, you know, we're going to try to muster together a mediocre show today, given the fact that we're in the depths of the despair over this.
That's right. But we are committed to you, the listener, so we will rally our troops and present to you a okay episode.
And we'll also give congratulations to the New Orleans Saints. They played a great season. Of course, it's a great thing for their city and for the country and all God's children and all that kind of stuff. But,
they were the better team that night, to be sure.
Yep. So moving on to gaming stuff, which is what we really want to talk about today. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about in our big deal today?
Well, we're going to talk about gaming groups, and not so much a step-by-step, but a kind of a discussion on two major camps of game groups, how you might start your own. Just a good discussion on the people that you play games with.
Yeah, the ups and downs of being a part of one of those, and just kind of go through a little bit of that. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to be bringing you a review in Buy, Try, or Deny for Campaign Manager 2008. And this is a game that I've been really looking forward to coming out for a while now, seeing as it's designed by the same folks who did 1960, mm-hmm. which is tops on my list.
Right.
And so we'll be talking about that and lots of other stuff. Got just lots going on.
A bevy of information.
As always. Yep. But as always, we do start off with a Game On Inbox, which starts
promptly.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it. Well, it is the Game On Inbox. We've got a, as I mentioned before, a bevy of information.
You like that word, don't you?
Bevy. I know, that's my word of the day. It kind of came up on my calendar.
Game On word of the day, bevy.
Bevy, B-E-V-Y. Before we get into all sorts of good gaming news, we give our due penance to Father Dan at Myriad Games.
Yes, we do. Dan at Myriad Games, our wonderful sponsor. Game On with Cody and John is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. And lots of great stuff going on at Myriad Games. You may know if you go to myriadgames.com, you may find that there's no website up right now. There's just like a page. They are behind the scenes updating that site and getting everything ready. So go back there often and check it out, and you'll find an updated site sometime soon. And one of the things we mentioned on the previous shows is the MVP membership that they have at Myriad Games, where they have different levels, and it's a certain amount of money that you're committing to basically spend at the store per month that they'll draft out via PayPal or whatever, and then you get lots of other benefits that go along with it. And Cody and I have taken the plunge, mm-hmm. and we've actually joined have a joint MVP membership at the Platinum level now. So we're going to in the next few weeks be able to tell you kind of how that's going, and encourage you guys to check that out. We're also going to try out the Game Share program, which is like Netflix for games.
Yeah,
and we're going to be a remote participant in that. So I think a lot of the people are already enjoying the benefits of that that live in New Hampshire and able to go in and just sort of check the games out. But we're going to kind of do it remotely and see how that goes.
Yeah, so it's going to be kind of nice because, you know, one of at least my resolutions, and I think John was on board with me on this, is, you know,
being more cautious about what games we buy, being a little more just judicious in that process.
I think you said making a game purchase a bigger deal, right?
Right.
That makes sense to me.
So the game share will be a nice thing. And I have to say, even though we've only been platinum members for not very long now, the customer service has already been through the roof. I mean,
oh, it's great. It's great. It's really the best part about this relationship with Myriad Games is that here in Indiana, there's a jewelry company, a jeweler called the Shane Company. And I don't know if it's a national chain or just a local thing, but they have these great commercials. And this guy always at the end says, you know, you've got a friend in the diamond business. And it sort of feels like with Myriad Games, like we've got a friend in the game business. And you know, I don't have to fill out some kind of complicated form or some feedback thing where I don't know if my comment is going into the ether somewhere. All I have to do is just email Dan, or I'm sure I could give him a call if I wanted to, and he will, you know, put that order in, and it really does feel like kind of old school customer service.
Yeah, I've had a few just back-to-back-to-back really rough customer service things here at the local game stores, and not just Licorice Game Preserve, some of the other ones as well. I've just had really just kind of crappy customer service, so I'm like, you know, Dan's going to take care of me here, so
absolutely,
I'm going to do it. So definitely check out those programs, and I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Yeah, you know, and to that end, let's go ahead and just mention this, that last episode we mentioned, the whole episode was entitled Seal of Approval, and we rolled out this new program that we're starting to recognize the best in friendly professional game stores, and it's the Game On Seal of Approval. And the idea being that if you have a game store near you that is doing things with excellence and is just above and beyond, I mean, not just it's a good store, I get good prices, it's good service, but, you know, just over the top stuff, you know, that they would do, like, you know, specials on the local news about because it's just so awesome. You know, we want to recognize those really high quality game stores. And so we're encouraging all of you listeners out there, if you have a store like that in your area, to send us an email at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep. And tell us all about it and really sell us on it as to why your store needs to get this high award. Because what we're going to do is then we will contact the nominee, you know, by phone, and we'll have like a little sort of phone interview with them and make sure they're legit. And then once we decide to award the seal of approval, we'll try to set up a phone interview with the owner of that store where they can tell us a little bit about their store. And again, the idea being that if you are near that store, then you can go and frequent that place and give them some business. And if not, then you might be able to get some good ideas to take back to your game store to improve the quality there. So you know, be sure to participate in that. We've already gotten, from the last episode, about three or four nominees. And so we're going to be researching those. We're vetting them. Yes, yes. Like, oh, that's appropriate since we're going to be talking about McCain and yep. Yeah, later on.
That's the joke.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, I'm slow, you know. Yeah, I got to piece it together. But we're going to have the very first recipient of this Game On Seal of Approval sometime in the near future. Next couple episodes, you'll be able to tune in for that. So, yep. So anyway, that's the Seal of Approval. We'll probably mention that every episode for a little while now, just to encourage you guys to write in. But let's move on to games that we've been playing. Cody, what have you been playing?
Played a lot. You know, last episode, I hadn't played much. I made up for it these last 2 weeks.
You stepped up.
Yep. Kaylin and I went and went up to Chicago for the Super Bowl weekend there and kind of hung out with the in-laws there. And there we played Dominion, Martian Coasters, World War V. Those are a few Ice House games, the Martian Coasters and World War V.
You are just eat up with the Looney Lab stuff.
I do.
You are Captain Looney.
Well, I can't stand Treehouse by itself. I don't like that game, but I like all of the pyramid games, and I want to pick up some more and really learn those.
You have... How many sets of that Treehouse stuff do you have now?
I have three of the rainbow ones, which three is kind of the magic number. That's where you can play most of the stuff. And then I have one of the Xeno ones because one of my friends just had it and didn't want it and knew I would take it, so I took
it. Cool. Now, the variants of those games, the additional games you can play, is that like in a book or is it online?
It's in a book, but there's actually kind of a whole wiki that someone set up that lists all the games and it divided into number of sets required. Oh. So you can say, I've got two sets. What can I play? I can play all of this and this. So there's some better known ones, kind of like Binary Home Worlds and things like that I'd like to try. But I really dig it. And I have to say, my father-in-law, Tim, is really liking Dominion.
He's into it, huh?
He's into it.
You got him hooked.
We played a ton of Dominion. And we played, I've got a little iPhone app, D-Minion, to where I can get a random set of 10 cards. Uh-huh. And we played with some interesting sets, you know, just some really weird, you know, three attack cards and no defenses and stuff like that. Yeah, but it was a lot of fun.
Those games where you run out of curse cards, that's always fun.
Let's see. I know we've played the Ticket to Ride card game.
That's right, yeah.
It was okay. It was better than I thought it would.
Yeah, that's a game where it feels like that should have been a different theme. Like, they just, in my opinion, they just sort of threw the train theme on to get a little bit more money. But I actually think if you play the game, I won't go into the details of it, but it's got sort of a set collection mechanic to it, but it's sort of blind set collection because you're trying to fill these routes with certain colored cards. But once you claim the cards, you put them in a face down pile that you don't get to look at until the end of your game. Yeah. So you have to kind of keep track in your mind of what you've already collected. For me, I think a theme of like cooking would have been a lot better, where you have cards that are more like recipe cards with ingredients, and then the cards that you would be getting out of the middle would be ingredients of those recipes. So,
yeah. You could even do like a memorabilia collector thing.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Anything that's like a collection sort of thing. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Z-Man, if you wanted to do Wasabi the card game, then I think that you could probably use the same mechanic. But yeah, it was okay. It was a good game.
And then last night we kind of had it was my birthday yesterday, and we had just kind of an impromptu little gaming get together, and we played a couple games of Are You the Traitor? Now, I know you mentioned Looney Labs. That's always kind of been my Looney Labs game. Right. It was a lot of fun. The thing is, it's just those first two turns with new people. It's just so weird because, like, okay, you're looking for this person and you're looking for this person, and it's kind of hard to sink in with the social element.
Yeah, we got that roadmap on the back of the cards to say, you know, who's looking for who.
But no, it really gained some ground, and people had a good time. We also played six-player Catan, which it was okay. It's got special rules built into it that make it go a little faster.
I don't think I've only played ever the normal version of Catan. I've never played any expanded stuff.
It's fun.
Okay.
What else did we do? We played a really fun game of Red Dragon Inn. Now, I have Red Dragon Inn plus the expansion, so that's 8 characters.
Red Dragon Inn 2?
What did I say?
The expansion. Red Dragon Inn 2, right? Yeah.
Okay. And so we played a 6-player game of that. It came down to the end, and it had this just kind of neat elimination feel to it. And
wow,
it was a lot of fun. So that's what I've been playing.
That's a lot, dude.
Yeah, I've got my I've received my War Machine Battle Group box for Kador. So I'm starting to slowly. I'm really bad at assembly. Painting, I'm good at. I'm really bad at assembly. So
you're in that tough assembly phase.
I'm
right
fumbling
now.
Through that right now, but okay. I think it's going to work.
Oh, bring them over. We can work on them together.
Sounds good. Yeah. What have you been playing?
Okay. Well, I've been playing a lot of Dominion as well. My lunch group that I play games with occasionally, you know, we were into Magic for a long time. And now Single L, you know, gaming podcast phenom from our show here, he has been into Magic for quite a while now, but he's really moved away from the physical cards. He is definitely online. Into Magic Online now. And he will play, you know, a booster draft, usually probably at least a booster draft a week, if not more than that. When he's just home, he can just, you know, grab it. So
it's good for him, though. I mean, because, you know, he can stay current and he doesn't have to find local opponents.
Well, anymore. And he's finding that he's getting better at it, too. And he's actually won several booster drafts. And so you get a bunch of cards when you do that, just like if you're at your local game store. And so he's already got several thousand cards in his collection. And when he gets, like, rares and epic rares and that kind of stuff, he just goes and trades them online with the other players, and so that way you can get a better collection. I think you can even sell your cards online in that capacity too. So, so we're not playing as much Magic then, just an occasional game. But what we are playing is a lot of Dominion, and we've been trying out all the different sets. Just I've been keeping them sort of separate: Dominion, Dominion Intrigue, Dominion Seaside, to give all my friends sort of the flavor of those sets. I think we're now to the point where we're going to start mixing them in together, but. Among my friends, Dominion Seaside has been by far the biggest hit. Like all the cards that are in there, I think they're just they're much more themey. I think I think that they're really enjoying that, and you sort of feel kind of piratey when you're, you know.
I have to say, I'm not digging the inner set mixing as much as I thought. Like I thought it would really be cool when you can just get a random 10 across 3 sets. I'm finding I like the games more where they're
separated. Oh wow, okay. Yep. And we're, you know, we're actually going to be talking a little bit about some upcoming Dominion stuff in game news. So a little radio tease there for you. also been playing Thunderstone, which in last episode we reviewed that I gave a hearty buy and Cody gave a surprising deny.
A well-founded deny.
Okay. But my friends have really enjoyed this game, and some of them have said that they think they might enjoy this better than Dominion. And just because it has that sort of different feel to it. So we've played two or three games of that in the last week, and yeah, it's gone really well. Everybody's getting the hang of it now, so it's not, you know, the clunkiness that I will even admit to about the game, it really goes away, I think, after a few tries. So that's been a lot of fun. Been playing a little bit of doing a little gaming with my son. My son is about to be 7, and so he can play a few of the games that I
Democker
have.
Democker.
Exactly, yeah, and Diplomacy. But I'm really looking forward to him getting to sort of that magic age where, you know, he's able to read now and he's able to understand more complex rules. But one game that is sort of in his age range that I was surprised was as good as it was is the game Cranium Kadoo. And, of course, you know, the Cranium franchise of games, they've come out with Cranium every dang thing.
Tick to Ride Cranium.
Tick to Ride Cranium Edition, right? Agricka Cranium. And so we found this game for like $5 in a bargain bin at the local retailer and just picked it up. And it's actually a lot of fun. It's basically the original game of Cranium, but with a just sort of, I was about to say dumbed down, but it's, you know, simplified for kids. And it's got this really cool sort of piece of, as the Spiel guys would say, goober about it, where it comes with one of those kind of red film. How do you describe it? It's like a set of little glasses that are red cellophane. No, that's what's the word for
Ruby
it?
Lith? I don't know.
No, like a transparency kind of a thing, but it's red.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, very good. And then on the cards that you play, it'll have some sort of a, you know, draw this and get the person to guess what it is. But the clue itself is on the card, but it's obscured, and you have to actually look through these glasses to be able to read it. And so that way, you know, you don't have to worry about the whole thing about, someone accidentally turning over a card or something.
That's kind of old school because a lot of those, you know, mass market board games in the 80s
had
that little red thing.
And yep. Yeah. So, but it's cute. And, you have this board where you're trying to get four pieces in a row that you lay down, and you're able to lay the pieces down on the board by getting these things for the cards. In addition to the normal things like drawing and sculpting with the clay, there's also one where it'll say, like, you need to go and find the following two things and come back before the timer runs out. So it'll be like something that is bendy and something that is transparent.
No.
And then they have to get up and run and do that. So I just found this was a game where Ethan could read the cards and he knew how to do all of the activities and he beat me fair and square a couple of times. So if you got kids around that age, I think that's a good one to pick up. Also, I was able to play one of my favorite games, 1960, The Making of the President. And this sort of came out of the fact that we had played Campaign Manager 2008, which we're going to review later on in the show. And as we played it, Cody and I played it, and his wife, Kaylin, was sitting there watching us play. And she is has a degree in political science. Mm-hmm. And so she's very much interested in politics and things like that. And Cody said, you know, I think you'd probably like 1960. You should play that with John because, you know, you don't want to play that with me. And so when we got together for gaming, Kaylin and I actually played a game of that, and it was phenomenal. It was so much fun. I still just absolutely love the game. I love the mechanics. And it came down to I was playing Kennedy, and Kaylin was playing Nixon, which, based upon our political affiliations, that was kind of a switch. But yeah. It ended up being a Nixon victory by a scant 13 votes. Yeah. Any one state switching one way or the other would have turned the tide there. So lots of fun there. And the last thing is the big adventure of War Machine.
Yep.
And I got to play my very first game of War Machine. And we played a little 15-point game, which is sort of the skirmish level. It's the level that if you're playing Battle Group Box versus Battle Group Box. I got all my stuff painted up for that. And my friend David from work, he had his stuff too. We got together and actually set things up on half of a ping pong table in his basement. And I don't have any really cool terrain. So I just got trees and bridges and stuff from HeroScape and just used that. And that worked just fine. And we had a great time. It was one of those things where we both didn't really know the rules. So we had to just sit. And when a rules question came up, we opened up the book. One thing I can really say is that the new Mark II rules for War Machine, the index in the back of the book is phenomenal. I mean, it's just like anything, I think I should look it up under this, and it was there. And it was so easy to find stuff in the book. So even though we were sitting there having to flip through the book, it really wasn't a problem at all. So I'm real excited about Cody getting his K-Door stuff painted up so we can give it a try. Yep. I think we may even do a full review of War Machine, even though the game's been out for a while. It's new to us, and we'd love to give you our impressions on it. So
I'm looking forward to it. If I can just get them assembled, we'll be good.
Yeah, definitely. No, you're going to do fine. It's not going to be hard. It's going to be all right.
All right.
Yeah, and then I will beat you.
Probably.
All right, well, that's games we've been playing, and so let's move on to some listener emails. And our first email comes from Aaron Ament, from the great state of...
We'll get 10 emails about it.
From the great state of... North Dakota, and we'll get into that in a second here. And he was writing with a question, and he said that he wanted to know, what do you think – I'm going to ask this question to you because okay. I think you're more equipped to answer it than I am probably. What do you think the impact that Wizards of the Coast, he says, with all its money, glory, and power – dropping the Star Wars RPG and miniatures line is saying about the financial impact on the typical game company. He says it seems that the financial crisis of the last year did not have a very huge impact that the people at last Gen Con were predicting, and in fact the opposite seemed to be true. Are companies like this now seeing a delayed impact of the financial crisis, or is WotC just trying to trim some Jedi fat? Just wondering.
I wouldn't say I'll address the Gen Con thing first. I wouldn't say it seems like it was better at Gen Con last year. It seems like they put on a good show, but parts of it were pared down. If you'd been there, if you're a regular attendee, you notice some things were a little pared down, but it was still good. As far as the WotC thing, I don't think their Star Wars RPG line made them that much money, or at least the ROI on it wasn't as good, because that license alone has to be so expensive to get from Lucasfilm. And I think the miniatures game was doing better than the RPG. At least locally, the miniatures game actually had a pretty decent following. I don't think it's going to kill them. I mean, I think they may actually end up a little better because they're not paying that licensing fee. And they can, you know, D&D is kind of what they're really shoveling all of their power into. You know, Magic is, you know, it's self-sufficient at this point. You know, it's doing great. People will buy it. Magic is their cash cow.
Well, one thing though about Magic, I think they are doing some investment in that still. In it, you know, new cards, of course.
Right.
But they just signed a deal with a video game company, the company that produced the Duel of the Planeswalkers Xbox Live game, which apparently is hugely successful. And to help to develop more stuff, so we might see more. And maybe they're going to be going more in this video game direction and the interaction with Xbox Live. So, but you're right. I mean, Magic is one thing where the player base is so installed already that they don't have to do a whole lot to keep that going.
Yeah, and I still, and I've said this theory in the past, and I still think it's kind of true that WotC may not be doing as well as they're kind of putting out. You know, right. I kind of, the way they've marketed 4th edition, it has just a hint of desperation into it. And maybe it's just the way I'm reading it, but you know, I've seen a lot, you know, as far as
back
RPG
in the Redbox days.
And it just seems like there's just a hint of desperation the way they're marketing it. It's like, we got to market this. We got to sell it, you know?
Yeah. You know, and the more I think about it, you know, Wizards of the Coast for so long had this kind of aura around it of the hobby game company. Fantasy Flight has that aura around it for me now. You know, I mean, they don't make, well, I guess they make the living card games. It's sort of like collectible card games, but you know, they're getting so much into RPGs now, and you know, they have that kind of a feel, like they're the healthy company, and Wizards is kind of trying to stay afloat.
Well, it's the talk I've talked about, kind of how RPGs are coming around in this cyclical kind of pattern to where it's going now toward the more rules light and indie RPGs, where it's not, you know, everyone doesn't play just D&D. You know, you got a lot of smaller game companies, a lot of different kind of game companies that are really filling that role, and people decide they don't need to make that investment into D&D. So I think WotC's still feeling the pinch, but I don't think Star Wars is going to hurt them. I think it'll help them dropping that license, actually.
Yeah. So, and more to his question, do you think that there's some real severe impact of the financial crisis on the gaming industry that we're just now seeing?
I don't think you're just now seeing. I think it's been kind of like a slow burn, you know.
Okay.
I don't think it's any delayed reaction from that, but they're feeling the pinch, just like we all are, really.
Yeah. Now, Aaron is from a town in North Dakota, because he wrote in last episode when we talked about it, and we pronounced it at the time as either Minot or Minute, and boy, that was a mistake.
Yeah, we got more response on this than anything else, say, for like the Tom Vassell fundraiser.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we had just people, person upon person, just emailing us saying, it's pronounced Minot.
You know, it rhymes with why not.
Yeah.
And so we got posts on the guild. We got lots of, we got it.
We got it.
We got it. Thanks. We're sorry.
So that was Aaron Amint from Minot, North Dakota.
That's right. Or Minot, however you like to pronounce it. So, you know, thank you very much for all those emails, and we'll make sure to attempt to pronounce it correctly in the future. Moving on to another email from a listener, Lucio Rodriguez, who is a relatively new listener but that we've actually mentioned before in the show, but we didn't even know that we had mentioned it before. So he says, first up, let me say that I've been enjoying your podcast. I've been listening to a number of podcasts for some time now. And after finding yours in December, I've been downloading and listening to a few episodes of your show a week. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
He said two interesting things. During the first of your episodes that I listened to, I had this sense that I recognized John's voice. After visiting your website and listening to a few more episodes, I realized that I played a game with John at the Spielathon a couple years back. And I do remember that. So, yeah, we played Witch's Brew with good Lucio game. And I believe with his wife, what's her name? Jackie? I think it might be Jackie. But
I don't know.
I'm just saying that. And had a real good time doing that. So, Lucio, it's good to kind of connect with you there. And he says that he's a regular on Board Game Geek. And after a number of years there, he posted something that garnered a bit of attention. But like anything else, it was eventually lost among whatever new things came along. He says, however, during the last several months, this post started gathering a large number of thumbs. You know, they got the thumbs up thing on BoardGameGeek. And when he listened to episode 21 of our show entitled Renovations, he discovered what he might believe to be the reason. And so just to reveal here, Lucio is the guy who made the giant Ticket to Ride Marklin board for his wife for like a big party. And we talked a little bit about this in that renovation show of things you can do to kind of pimp out your board games or buff them up. And so he made this giant board with these big chunks of wood as the, painted wood as the trains.
That was awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, and he says, if you had listened to that show and thought that was interesting, something you might want to do, he says, one piece of advice for anyone who's considering doing this, plan ahead, open the game, take a survey of all the stuff in the box, and then count it all. Yeah, in all my planning, I was spot on except for one detail. After figuring, okay, I need a board, I'll use the cards in the game, I'll need some passengers and some trains, it wasn't until he purchased the lumber that he realized just how many trains there are in the game. 45 trains per person for a total of 225 trains. While the lumber itself wasn't expensive, he did have to cut 225 trains, sand them, prime them, and paint them. He says, I still don't know why I went ahead and did it. but he says, keep up the good work, Lucio. So thanks very much, Lucio, for writing in, and I'm glad you're able to find our show, and I'm glad maybe we were able to give your project a little bit of attention there. So moving on to another one from Mr. Daniel Davis, who is writing us from, he didn't say where he's writing from, so from somewhere.
From parts unknown.
Somewhere in the internet.
That's the old WWF way of doing it.
Yeah. And he had some comments regarding our GM Academy episode. And I wanted to get sort of your opinion on some of the things that he said here, Cody. So he says, the first episode that he listened to was GM Academy. Oh, so he's a new listener. Thanks so much.
Welcome.
And he says, as a part-time GM myself, I have one important piece of advice to offer to me being the new GM. When in doubt, make it fun, he says. Even if the rules have to be bent and broken, I think a GM's most important job is to facilitate a fun atmosphere. After all, if the PCs aren't enjoying themselves, what's the point? This is why I like to keep all of my roles a secret. I can flub them in any direction necessary to keep the game fun for the PCs while still maintaining a sense of fair play. I know some people don't like GMs who do this, but I make sure the PCs know my methods and then know that I'm not a rules Nazi. The rules are there to provide the foundation in which we as a group are to build the fun. And so I wanted to get your opinion on that. What do you think about that? We talked a little bit about that in the episode. But do you have any opinions on that?
I would say that the overall theory, he's absolutely right. That you keep it fun. You know, it's like you're not a slave to the rules. You know, you just keep it going. The screen or no screen, roles hidden, roles open. It really just depends on the person, and I think depends on the group too. Because I've got a few people in my game that, you know, if things aren't going well for them, you know, they can get kind of whiny about it. And so I do my roles out in the open. And if if I had a screen, you know, they would be like, oh, another hit. You know, they're just those kind of people that drive you nuts sometimes. Right. But with the right group, I think, you know, having a behind a screen is a good way to go because then you can fudge it any way you want. So
yeah. That's one thing that's interesting about this, Warhammer fantasy roleplay game that I'm going to be running is that the dice are kind of all they're all kind of rolled out in the open, and everybody can sort of interpret what's happening based upon the dice, and so because there's so many symbols, there's a lot of variety and a lot of things that can go on. So I'm really looking forward to it. We didn't talk about this in earlier news, but I'm getting closer to that that first session. Probably going to be doing that next month sometime.
Very good advice, though.
All right, one last thing that I want to talk about. We've gotten a couple of emails regarding the Jones Theory.
Right.
And Cody, why don't you talk a little bit about this?
We've got a few emails that are basically listing 30 to 40 games and saying, Jones Theory this.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I could Jones Theory that for me, because it's the Jones Theory. But the kind of... I don't want people to miss the point on it, whereas the main overarching point is keeping your game collection to where it's... what's the word I want to use? Not profitable.
Manageable?
Manageable, practical would be a good word. Good return on investment. There we go. That's the goal. And my buckets, as John called them, buckets, you know, how you separate your games, could be very different from yours, you know, depending on how you or your game group really operates. So to send me a list of games and to see how I would pare it down may not work for you at all.
Right. You need to come up with the you theory.
Yeah.
For your own game collection as to what things are important to you as far as those, like I said, buckets to put things in.
Yeah, it's like the overarching thing of the Jones Theory is the idea of paring down a game collection, you know, kind of trimming the fat, basically. Right. And how you do that, the Jones Theory is just a guide, so you can do that for yourself. So, yeah, I can take your games and cut them down to my list, but...
And for several of the folks who sent in long lists of Euro games, it'd be real easy.
Oh, there was one that I was just like, well, I'll just take a red pen and straight down. There you go.
So because of that, you really do need to come up with your own theory. The idea being one game per category, mm-hmm. and you pick based upon theme or mechanic, and you got to pick that category and, you know, make it as granular as you want.
Right.
To.
And we actually had another email in the inbox. The name escapes right now. I apologize. Someone that's saying if you have a regular game group, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, you may want to consider that. You know, that's a smart idea. If one person in your group has War of the Ring Collector's Edition, well, you probably don't need to get it because, you know, you're going to be playing that with them most of the time.
You might need to break in their house and steal it
exactly.
from them.
And ship it to Game On with Cody.
Exactly.
But that's just kind of a blanket thing with the Jones Theory. If you have questions about it, you know, and how you can kind of implement it for yourself, I'm happy to answer those. But I'm just saying, sending me a list and saying Jones Theory this may not be the most...
It might not be that helpful to you,
yeah,
really.
Yeah. I'm lazy anyway, so I probably won't do
exactly. All right, so that's our inbox as far as listener emails. And mm-hmm. so we got a little bit of gaming news that we just want to mention, just a couple of real quick things. One thing is a very exciting announcement from the folks at Drive-Thru RPG. Now, I can't remember if we mentioned on the show... I think we did.
We might have.
If we didn't, maybe some emails went out or something like that. But in the gaming community, Drive-Thru RPG, which is the largest website available for downloading RPG content, PDFs, and things like that, they were having a fundraiser where they were able to get literally over, what, like $1,000 or more of product.
Yeah, it was like $1,400 worth of product
right.
in RPGs.
Of downloadable product. And that included even things like the entire Serenity role-playing game mm-hmm. and all kinds of modules and things like that.
There's a lot of stuff from Fat Dragon Games in there.
Right. Yeah, the tiles for that. Yep. And so all of that for $20. For like a $20 donation, yeah. you get the access codes to download all of that great stuff.
It was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, it really was.
I got it.
Did you?
Yeah,
okay. And so a lot of people apparently stepped up and did this. This was an unbelievable number to me. From that fundraiser, Drive-Thru RPG was able to raise $178,900 for Haiti. And it's going to go to a charity called Doctors Without Borders, which are already kind of down there in Haiti to provide medical care for the folks that are victims of the earthquake. And so that's just great, you know, for the gaming community.
It's a win-win all the way around.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's great since it's electronic stuff. I mean, there's just such little overhead on something like that, so it's real easy to provide.
I know their servers got hammered early on.
Sure, yeah.
It took me a while to get it.
But didn't they say to like wait for a while to download stuff if you could? So that's great news. So to all of you who donated to that great venture, well done.
Well done indeed.
All right, a little bit another piece of gaming news regarding a upcoming release. We mentioned last episode that the game Mystery Express is going to be coming mm-hmm. out from Days of Wonder. We always love it when a new big box game comes out from Days of Wonder. Mm-hmm. And Cody, you are particularly excited about this
one. I am, pun not intended here, I am on board with this one because they posted the rules, they posted some other teaser information on it, and man, I'm ready to go.
Actually downloaded and read the rules, right?
Yeah. And
which
I
you never do.
I don't do that. Reading rules for games is not a fun venture for me, but
right.
man, I'm behind this. And because I actually I like deduction games. I like Clue. You know, a lot of the thing with Board Game Geek is, you know, if you play any classic game, Monopoly, Clue, whatever, it's like, oh well, you're not a true gamer. Whatever. I like Clue. I like deduction games like this. But this seems to really take it to the next level. And just some of the things I've seen, it looks really good. I had Myriad Dan add it to my list for April when it looks like kind of March, April when it's going to come out there.
Cool.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And Days of Wonder is almost entering that Looney Labs category where I can't really think of many games of theirs that I just really dislike.
I'm not sure if I can either. Some of the earlier games I haven't played, like Mag Blast and Terra and things like that, the earlier card games. But yeah, I mean, it's from Ticket to Ride on,
right?
It's been some good stuff. So yeah, so we're excited about that one. That's coming out in April, I believe. So, and speaking of new stuff that's coming out, for those of you who are fans of the game Dominion, because I sure am, and Tim Jarks, Cody's father-in-law. New expansions coming out for Dominion. Now, that's one thing that we've talked about regarding Dominion is we're a little concerned about expansions coming out too fast. But, you know, hey, they got to make their money while they can, I guess.
Strike right? while the iron's hot.
Exactly. So coming out sometime in 2010, earlier rather than later, I don't know if it'll be spring or summer. I didn't really get an exact date. New small expansion called Dominion Alchemy. And it's actually going to come in a smaller box than the regular Dominion box. And it's going to have 150 cards, and that'll comprise of 12 kingdom decks and a new treasure card called the Potion, which I think that maybe some of these cards in this expansion, you'll actually need potions in order to make these things or to buy certain cards. So that looks like that's going to be pretty interesting. I don't really know what the price is going to be on that, but it did look like it was in a smaller box. And then coming later in 2010 will be another big box expansion called Dominion Prosperity. So, you know,
we'll see.
Lots of Dominion.
I was worried about Seaside. It ended up being a great game. But I kind of just wish they would do just one big thing a year, if that.
You know? I mean, if the game starts coming with, like, sand timers and miniatures, then I'm going to be like, we're done.
Full battle grid.
Exactly. Yeah. Dominion on the warpath. Yeah. You know? But that's going to be coming up soon. And I love Dominion. It's currently my number one game, so I'm sure I'll be buying all that stuff. All right. Well, that is gaming news. And, you know, that's most of the Game On Inbox, I think, right?
Yep.
But we want to move into... you know, a few episodes ago, we started off a new RPG segment, which Cody entitled The Tanglefoot Bag.
Right.
And after doing our GM Academy episode, Cody made a decision.
Yeah, we got a lot of good feedback on that and a lot of people writing in with their kind of RPG and GMing questions. So I've decided to kind of repackage that as the little segment called the GM Academy, and let's start it now. And one of the questions we got is actually kind of asking for more of a explanation of kind of starting out for a new group. And this is actually from Greg Thomas, who is a member of my 4th edition gaming group.
Yes.
And I met him through a community band in the area. So he's kind of new to RPGs. He'd always wanted to try it. And, you know, we kind of found out that I did it and I invited him and he's been coming ever since. So here's his question.
Very nice guy.
Very nice guy. He asks, what types of supplies are needed for running a game, especially in a brand new group that's never played a role-playing game before? Various types of dice seem pretty obvious, but what other types of items are needed for both the GM and the players to run a game? Examples, is there a map or a game board? How do you represent players and monsters, et cetera, all the basics. Additionally, what could one expect to invest money-wise into everything?
$5,000.
That's a really good question because I kind of glossed over that as assumed, and honestly, if the whole group is new to it, that may not be assumed necessarily.
Yeah, it's a good point to bring up.
So I think whoever, usually in this case, kind of one person is leading this charge. You know, one person saying, hey, let's try this. You know, you might get the whole group decided all at once that they want to do D&D, what have you. But you definitely want to do your homework because I can't give a blanket answer and say, you know, for any RPG, you will need this, this, and this. Because you don't need a battle mat for all RPGs. You don't need dice for all RPGs, you know.
Right.
Things like that. So
mouse guard.
Yeah, mouse guard. You don't need anything. You need a...
how do you feel about the cat that's attacking
you? You need an MFA in theater to do mouse guard. But what I'd say is do your homework and if anything, buy less than you need. And what I mean by that is if the game you're wanting to run has a starter set or beginner set or anything like that, definitely go that route, especially if you're new to RPGs. And you don't, like, everyone does not need to buy a player's handbook. And I would say do not do that until you are sure. And even then, everyone probably doesn't need one. But just doing some basic research will find, you know, what dice you may need, what, you know, if you need a battle mat or maps. And the great thing about a lot of these starter sets is that they will have them in there. Like, they usually have one set of dice, which the whole group can use. You can pass them around as needed. They'll have some sort of battle mat and figures, and it's very focused on everything you need. I know the Warhammer set has
everything you need.
Everything you would need for that. If you're playing a game that doesn't necessarily have that, let's say Hollow Earth Expedition, for example, yeah. You know, you say that game looks cool. I think I'm going to run it, but it just has a book. If you do a little research, you can kind of find out, read some reviews on it and find out, what you need. In that case, you don't need a map for it. You can use a map of your own creation. You pretty much just need some sort of dice and then some sort of tokens for the style points.
Right. You don't even need Ubiquity dice to be able to play, right?
You can play with a bunch of D6s if you want. You can play with a bunch of D20s if you want. It doesn't really matter. But I'm saying a lot of these products have a full listing on their site. You'd be surprised if you go in there and you can find within a couple of minutes of what you need to play it. But I would say only have one person get it. Like I said, not everyone has to buy a new set of dice. Not everyone has to buy the rule book. Start small, and then as you enjoy the game, increase your investment in it. I would say early on, he asked for a price. Like I said, it's tough to say a blanket statement. I'd say a good beginner set will usually anywhere from 30 to 50. I know Warhammer will run you 100, but...
Right.
But I mean, that's the exception and not the rule there.
Oh yeah, that's a very different system. That's very component heavy. So right. That's on the high end, I think.
Yeah, and don't think you need all of these fancy tools. You don't have to have a full Chessex battle mat and right. all these, you know, neat props and miniatures. It's like just use a thimble, use a little rock, use a gaming stone or something. You know, you don't have to get fancy, especially when you're learning. It's once everyone starts to like it, you can really ramp it up. But if anything, my advice would be buy the minimum and then build from there. But that was a good question and something we didn't really cover. So
yeah, outstanding. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg. And I will see you at the next game.
Cool. All right. Well, I think it just about wraps up.
The Academy is closed.
The Academy is closed. The doors have been closed for this episode.
If any of you have any RPG questions or GMing questions, send them to the Game On Inbox
at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's the address.
Stepped on you there, sorry.
You didn't. And then we may answer them in a future GM Academy segment.
All right. Well, I think it's about time for us to move on to our big deal, where we're going to be talking about gaming groups in group therapy.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big.
The more we get together, 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 the more we get together, the happier be, because your friends are my friends, and my friends are your friends. The more we get together, the happier we'll be. Oh, the more we get together, 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 the more we get together.
Well, welcome to The Big Deal, where this episode we're going to be talking about gaming groups. Mm-hmm. And we're going to divide it into like a couple of different sections here as to different kinds of groups. This has been on our mind a little bit because Cody has a regular group that he's been a part of for a long time. And I'm in sort of a spot where I'm wanting to start a group. I could join Cody's group, I guess, he's kind of late in his campaign and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I'm kind of wanting to more go a board gaming route than RPGs. So, Cody, go ahead and give us the two categories here, and we're going to talk about the individual challenges of each kind of category.
All right. I would first say mine is what you call an inherited game group. This started
when your parents died. You right. they handed you down.
Here's your gaming group, son.
My parents are alive.
Parents are alive.
This is, you know, I've been with this kind of core group of folks since like my freshman year of high school. You know, when we'd all play the first edition D&D game, and you know, that's just kind of been the gaming group. And you know, just the quick hit on that one is that's nice because you have a gaming group already. You've got people you can call in to play games. But the bad thing is, they may not necessarily like the same kind of games you do. You know, because in my position, it's they really like role playing games, but they're not real big on board games, and they're not real big on trying new board games or just doing board games in a night. You see where I'm going with this?
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I'm kind of stuck there because it's, you know, it's do you contact other people? You know, you don't want to step on toes. It's just this kind of big.
Yeah.
It's nice because you have the group there, but it also creates a mess, you know, because you kind of got to take what you get. And
once people are invested in something and they've been doing it for years and years and years, they just, it's just kind of what they do, right?
Right.
You know, so and have you found that the tastes and personalities of these folks have changed over the years? I would imagine probably a little bit.
A little bit, but not really a whole lot. Oh. I mean, we didn't.
Yours probably has.
Yeah, mine has.
Yeah,
just because I'm pretty flighty in my game tastes. But no, I mean, we would play, back in the old days, as it were, you know, we would play board games occasionally, and we would have smaller turnouts on those nights. And that really hasn't changed. It's probably just become more severe. You know, a lot of the gaming group is involved with the LARPing now, live-action role-playing. And it's just, you know, I mean, I did it for a while, but...
Dark Lord of Denny's.
And you just... That's just kind of all-consuming, it seems, sometimes, you
sure.
know. And it's just like, that's all they talk about and all they play, and they don't, you know... Board games are silly because, you know, I'm in a LARP and things like that, you know.
They have transcended the hobbyist gamer.
Maybe. I mean, and LARPs are fun. I don't want to say that they aren't.
Sure.
But, you know, it just seems like, you know, they have time enough for, you know, X amount of games, and board games aren't going to make that.
Right.
Aren't going to make that list. And I don't know. It's like I'm the kind of person where I think, you know, as we're all adults now, you know, we say, hey, we're going to do some board games. Who's in? No one in like my inherited group ever RSVPs because we never had to. You know,
right.
We always just showed up on Friday at the Gazaways and played games.
Right. Yeah. And your kind of gaming mentor, if you will, James Gazaway, mm-hmm. he just sort of had a house where it was almost kind of an open door thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, on that Friday night.
Yeah. So we would just all come, and you didn't need to do it. So trying to get, you know, RSVPs out of people, you can't because they just won't do it. It's I don't know why. You know, it's more just ingrained. They don't have to. It's like, hey,
well, it becomes sort of a thing of, you know, you don't have to RSVP the video store to let them know you're going to come and rent a movie.
Right.
You know, it's just always open. And so if you decide you want to go there, great. If you don't, big deal.
Yeah.
So it's sort of that environment.
Yeah, and it's hard when you're trying to organize an event, you know, or decide what games you're going to play because you don't know if you're going to have three people or eight people.
Right.
You know, And it always just seems kind of like a last resort. It's like, well, I'll come if something better doesn't come up, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the problems you get with an inherited group, at least in my case. But the benefit being that you have a stable of gamers you could probably call upon if you really wanted to try something, you could drum up.
Pull out the bat signal there. And just
right, and get a couple people. So and I'm playing weekly, which a lot of people can't do. So
that's true, yeah.
I've got to count my blessings there. So that's more the inherited group. And, John, I would say you are trying to get the...
Intentional
gaming group, where you are seeking out to not cherry pick, but you're picking people and creating a gaming group.
Right. And that has its own challenges to it because I'm not someone who really grew up gaming like Cody did. It's been sort of a new hobby for me in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. And I've met a lot of people, especially through Gen Con, a lot of gaming folks. They're all a wide variety of folks and interests and things like that. There's folks who like LARPs, like RPGs, who, you know, like collectible card games, all that kind of stuff, and some who like board games. In general, if you get any of those folks together into a room, you can get them to play something. I mean, you know, they're real easygoing sort of people. But, you know, if I have a particular kind of game that I want to play, like what I really want to do is come up with some sort of a game night, a weekly game group or bi-weekly, where we're going to sit down and play something kind of meaty, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, something that's like a Looney Labs game. I could play that with my wife or, you know, with Cody. There's a lot of opportunities that might come up to play those kind of games or to play party games. But to play something with a little bit more depth to it, for some reason, Middle Earth Quest comes to mind as a game recently that we played that is definitely got some depth to it. But I'd like to be able to get those kind of games to the table more often. If for no other reason than when we play a game like Middle Earth Quest the first time, it's that dreaded learning game,
right.
You know, where you're trying to figure the rules out. And so half of it's fun and half of it is just kind of a slog of learning the rules. I want to be able to say, hey, we're going to play Middle Earth Quest, and then 2 weeks from now, we're going to play it again, you know, and that way we can get it under our hands and our fingers and know it a little bit better and hopefully have more fun with it. But it takes a certain kind of folk to want to come and do that, you know. And so being able to find those people and then being able to find a time and a day that meets that sort of a schedule for them, like the guys that I work with, they've always been very open to the different games that I want to try. And I really appreciate that about them, that they've been good learners of about anything I wanted to throw at them. But they all have families and spouses and lives of doing other things. So if I were to say, hey, I want to get together every 2 weeks on this on a Friday to play games, it would be hit and miss, I think, as to who would attend, you know. And then I think that the actual interests of these folks would really come about, you know. And I think that makes it even harder than an intentional group, because your intentional group, they'll at least show up, you know, most of the time. But if I start saying I'm going to play this kind of board game, I think I'm going to find that the group of people that I would think would come and play, maybe it's about half of those people would actually come, because maybe they've been accommodating me. So that's been a real challenge. Now, one thing that we tried, because I wanted to sort of kick this off and sort of, you know, get some sort of a regular thing going on with gaming at my house, is we had a big game night. We invited, how many people did we invite?
40, I think.
Yeah, that was maybe not a good idea anyway, but we wanted to have just a big, fun, social game night, you know, bring the kids and all that kind of stuff. And we ended up having, I think, 20, 25 people.
There's a lot of folks.
We had 3 or 4 tables set up. And we got to play a lot of games, and it was fun. It was very loud and hectic, and with all the kids and everything. And but what games ended up coming out? You know, Looney Labs games, out of the box games. You know, great games, but these lighter party games, because it just wasn't an environment where I could have pulled out Middle Earth. I couldn't even pull out something as you know, like Shadows Over Camelot, you know, in that kind of a setting, because it would have just been too meaty and too long. So everybody said they had a real good time at that, but I've been hesitant to do it again, because that wasn't really the goal that I was trying to get to. Let's have a big group of 20 people come over every 2 weeks and have party games. So, anyway, that's the challenges of the intentional game group, I guess.
Yeah, you've got it's two very different sets of challenges. What's the strength of one group is the challenge of the other. You know, right. I've got a regular schedule group. It's hard for you to get a regular scheduled people with that.
Right.
But you would all, in the end, your goal would be get everyone with similar game interests together. Where I have a group formed, but they have very disparate game interests.
Yeah, so. I guess we're screwed.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's the episode.
There's the big deal.
So, some things to consider when you're this would probably be more toward John, more the intentional gaming group, or I've always wanted to do a weekly or biweekly board gaming group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first thing you really have to decide is the level of structure you want to do with it, versus we're going to have come and play games, we're going to do it every Friday, and just leave it at that. You don't really list what games you're going to play. It's like, oh, we'll just see who shows up and decides.
Right.
What we play. Or versus where you kind of be proactive and say, okay, this Friday we're going to play Descent. So we'll come over and we'll play Descent. Everyone kind of has an expectation going in. They know what they're playing. But that may be too structured for some.
Right. But, you know, I think that might be the best option for me, at least. Because if I just say, you know, come on over, we'll do, you know, some kind of games, then you might get some folks coming. They won't know, well, should I bring my spouse or not? You know, my relatively non-gaming wife or not. But if I were to say, hey, next Friday night, I'm setting up Descent. We're going to play some, we're going to start a Road to Legend campaign and just, you know, just do that, get that launched, you know.
Right.
Not saying we'd do it every week, but that's what we're going to play is Descent. Then I think that would at least give the people that are involved the option to say, well, yeah, Descent, I've been wanting to try that. I'll do it. Or, yeah, it's just not for me, you know.
Yeah.
So I think you would get the greater number of true believers, you know, to come to the ones that would be really interested in your game.
Right. I agree. I think that is the way to go, just because I think we're both pretty organized folks, and we just want to say we're running this game, and you can say 1 week we're doing Settlers, 1 week we're doing Descent, 1 week we're doing Middle Earth Quest, you know. You can mix it up. You can still get that variety that an open play atmosphere would give you.
Yeah.
But you can just do it week to week. That kind of leads to a little sub question there is, you know, how many people do you want in the, for lack of a better term, in the stable? You know, it's like,
In your bullpen.
Yeah, because if you announce the game every week, you could have some people. Like, if I announced I'm doing Settlers, you're probably not going to come because you don't like the game.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, do you have, you know, eight people on the on-call list where you send the invitation every week and you get people, you know, you could do it on something like Facebook. I think that would be a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Just do it like a weekly event. But how many people do you have? Because if you have eight people in your stable and they all say yes to something, well, then you're kind of screwed. You can't play Descent with eight people.
Right.
You know, I think that's just kind of a sub question to think about is how many people do you really have tucked away there?
That would be interesting in something like that. Yeah. And I guess you can sort of do some things on the fly that if you had eight people saying they wanted to play Descent, well, you know, then maybe you could write them back and say, hey, we have a big group that wants to come. We'll do one game of Descent and one game of, and then pick something else. But I think that one of the key things in this is if you're going to do a game group like this is go ahead and be firm about picking the game, mm-hmm. you know, because too many times have I been in game environments. Heck, you and I, when we get together weekly, you know, Cody and I get together once a week to play either the game for the podcast or just some other stuff. And we find ourselves half the time just kind of staring at the game closet going, I don't know, what do you want to play? You know, that'd be okay. And you know, we play Rock Band or something. Yeah. You know? And so I think it is a good thing to say, we're meeting at this time. Come on over to my house. This is what we're going to play. And then let them make the decision as to whether they want to show up or not.
And I want to say, I may be wrong in this, but I think Eric Summer of the Dice Tower, he's in a gaming group and they have a rotating pick the game.
Oh,
kind of mechanic where it's okay. Like, okay, it's Ted's week. Ted, what do you want to play? You know, and he says Carcassonne or whatever. And you do that. And it's just kind of this rotating thing.
Okay.
That may be an interesting thing. We can get to that here in a second. One thing that intrigues me is how much organization do you want to put into it? Do you want to do an informal group where it's just a group of friends? Or are you looking at this to grow and become an organized gaming group, even a club like CABS, the Columbus Area Board Gaming Society?
Yeah, like a big citywide sort of a thing.
Right, you know, they have, community. It is, I assume, you know, a legal club.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's like, a 501c, whatever.
401k?
For a Roth IRA.
XYZ.
Yeah. But, you know, they have a club library. It's like no one person, I'm just spitballing here. I haven't really done a lot of research on CABS. But from what it looks like, no one person owns all the games.
Right. It's owned by the organization.
It is the club, you know. So there's probably a, you know, a board of directors or a, you know, a president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. So it's like you need to decide how formal you want to do it. I would love there to be an Indianapolis gaming club, you know, where we, you know, rent out a big space and we have a bunch of games going, but I don't want to run it, you know.
Right. And there's some groups out there that exist. There's an Indianapolis board gaming meetup group.
Yeah.
There's a D&D meetup group, I believe. But yeah, something of that magnitude, it's like it's a neat idea, but no, I wouldn't want to be in charge of that. But, you know, CABS is a good example of a group that's very successful. And I think they do weekly, bi-weekly, something like that. They have some kind of a venue where they just – all their games are in like these giant metal rolling carts, like big rolling bookshelves.
It's quite a sight to see if you haven't seen it. It's impressive.
Yeah, and they just open them up, and then you know people come and play. And so I think they get just huge turnout. Yeah. And then they've even gone the step farther in running the boardroom at Origins every year, where they have this giant ballroom. They open up their collection there, and people can come and check out games in the room there. It's a huge thing.
Yeah, I mean, if we had something like that here, I would be on that in a second, because you know they do a thing where you can come to their events and you can pay a flat fee per event, I think it is, you know, pay like a buck or two.
Yeah.
Or you can just, if you're a member, then you have unlimited things.
Right.
So there's dues involved, but obviously that goes towards renting the spaces and buying the games.
See, getting something like that together in Indianapolis would be exciting for Gen Con, you know,
because
I think a lot of board gamers, partially due to Tom Vassell's propaganda, but also just due to other things they've heard about, would prefer to go to Origins because of the boardroom.
Right. You know,
they're like, well, if you're a board gamer, go to Origins because that boardroom is just awesome.
I can't blame them.
If you're a board gamer, it is the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Gen Con has so much more to offer, I think, as a convention.
Yeah.
But and they do have a games library, but it's not quite the same sort of environment. So if
much louder room, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The selection's not as great.
So if something like CABS existed in Indianapolis, where you know a group was willing to bring in their games and run something like the boardroom, I think you'd get more board gamers at Gen Con.
Yeah. And obviously that's the high end of the scale. You know, we're talking a group of six to eight people up to that. But it's kind of, you know, something to talk about with your group once you've kind of gotten together. It's like, well, do we want to make this bigger? Do we just want to keep it us?
And I think that that conversation is very important.
Yeah.
Because I'll use the example that there was a group of gamers here in Indianapolis called the Mavens. Mm-hmm. And they were formed out of the Gen Con community forums. This is how Cody and I met, actually, yep. was through the Mavens. And a great group of folks. And the mission statement, if you will, of the group was informally, was that it was sort of like a Gen Con fan club where we got together once a month and we talked about Gen Con. We prepared for the convention. And then this group put on a big party for the forum members the night before Gen Con. Now, they still do this. They still have that. But then as more people joined the group, folks started to have sort of different priorities for things. And they said, well, we think we'd like to do some kind of a big gaming event. We don't play enough games. We just sit around and talk about games. So then they formed this thing called MavenCon, which was like a sort of a way for the Mavens to get together and have a little retreat and do some gaming. And then it was so successful that they said, well, let's do this again. But hey, let's rent out a hotel. And
let's
open it to the public. And it became a much bigger thing until it got to the point where there was some conflict, I think, between what the different priorities that people had for what the Mavens were supposed to be about and what they weren't, And so what kind of ended up happening, and as I pull all the skeletons out of the Mavens closet here, sorry Mavens if you're listening, but no, is that they just decided that they wanted to keep the focus of the Mavens to be Gen Con and the Stink, which is the name of the party that they throw for the forums. And so all the folks that were interested in that kind of remained with the Mavens. The folks that were interested in growing things more, kind of sort of broke off into a different group and got involved in what's now become HoosierCon, which we go to every year. So anyway, that's just an example of if you don't have that conversation early on, then things could get kind of big and all of a sudden people have very differing ideas of what a group is supposed to be. Now you're not going to have that problem if you've got four people in your living room. Right. But
I just like the idea of a gaming club. You know, it'd be neat. It's go to Origins, like, oh, we're part of the Indianapolis Gaming Club. You know,
yeah, we've got a ribbon.
Yeah, we've got a ribbon. We've got a polo shirt. You know?
Exactly.
But that's something to think about. And then I guess from there on, we hit on this earlier. You know, how do you form it? Do you pick the people and just say, I'm doing this? Do you, before you even make an event, or do you just set a date and time to yourself and say, I'm playing Descent on February the 12th. Who's in?
Yeah. And I think we've had good success with that when we played Diplomacy last year.
Yeah.
Because we just said, and we'd send out the invitations pretty good in advance, but we just said, this day we're doing Diplomacy. We talked it up for a few weeks and everybody was like, yeah, I'm totally in. I've got that on my schedule. And I think that doing it that way is probably probably the best way to do it if you have folks that are older and have a lot of family commitments, because I know that for me, one thing I didn't even mention is that a real difficulty is in getting something started is the idea of kids. It's like, for me, if someone else had a gaming group and I I'll use your gaming group as an example, I would come to your gaming group more often, except for the fact that I need to kind of, stay home with the family and watch the kids. And I can't commit myself to that many more days away.
Right. Because we already get together during the week.
Yeah, we do. So I'm already doing that one time a week. And so I don't feel like I can really break away from that. So if I did want to come, or if Rachel and I wanted to come, we'd have to get a babysitter. And so there's just more considerations there. So handling all of that and navigating that becomes an additional thing. Yep. So I think that being able to be intentional about this is the game we're playing and this is the night that we're doing it, it really allows you to gauge their interest and decide whether they really want to be a part of it or not.
Right. It's not like we're saying, have a very fascist approach to it and say, we're doing this time, but at some point it's, what do they call a horse built by a committee,
A camel.
Right. So, at some point you just have to say, we're playing this day. If you can make it, great. If you can't, sorry. But, if we ask what day is going to be great for everyone, we're not going to play for another 8 months.
Yeah.
So you just got to kind of set that down there and decide how frequently you want to do it, weekly, biweekly, monthly, what have you.
Yeah, I think just planning is just important, because yep. I think people with our busy lives that we have here in 2010, it's important to get something down on paper or get it in the iPhone or whatever. Mm-hmm. To use Myriad Games, their slogan is so many games, so little time. And so start playing. Mm-hmm. And that's really true. And we've talked, the Jones theory has to do with that. And this conversation has to do with that too, that there's so much to play. And if you really want to get the things you like to the table, sometimes you have to be real intentional about it.
So to wrap this up, we'd really like to solicit your input on this. If you're part of a regular group, even if it's just a group of friends or an organized club, or you're don't really have a group and you're looking for one, please send us an email, because I'm very interested in kind of hearing the different stories, you know, the state of the Game On Nation, as it were.
A gamer nation.
So send us your emails and tell us, you know, how you got with your group. If it was just a group of friends, if it was a club, you know, you saw a post at a gaming store and you decided to meet up with these people. BGG has a lot of gaming groups.
Right.
Send us an email at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And, you know, I think we'll discuss some of it in the next episode. And we just like to know. Definitely post in the guild as well.
Yeah, because, you know, we didn't come to a whole lot of great conclusions here other than, you know, it's difficult and here's some tips and tricks. Yeah. But what has worked for you guys? That's more important to us. We want to hear from you.
Well, hopefully the discussion we had will at least maybe spark some interest in your minds and you can give us some ideas on how we should best go forward.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, sounds like another good episode of group therapy.
It was fantastic. I feel a lot better. Yeah.
I feel better.
We'll hug it out. Yeah, let's know.
Now let's instead go to By Triard and I, where we will talk about two people that maybe didn't want to hug it out. Senators McCain and Obama, as we go into Campaign Manager 2008.
Let's do it.
Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right, it's time for Buy, Try, or Deny, and we have a new game from Z-Man Games.
Yay!
Easy. Campaign Manager 2008, which recreates the epic battle between Senators McCain and Obama as they seek the presidential...
Well done.
The presidency, as it were. And John's going to give you the rules breakdown, and then we will discuss it. John.
All right, so Campaign Manager 2008 was released just in January here, 2010. And it was designed by Christian Leonard and Jason Matthews. You may recognize those names as being the designers of 1960, The Making of the President.
I didn't.
And you didn't?
I didn't recognize.
Oh, it's a shame. And one of those designers, and boy, I didn't do my research here, it's either Christian or Jason, was the co-designer of Twilight Struggle, which is a very epic board game about the Cold War. Very highly rated on Board Game Geek, Twilight Struggle is. This game, on the other hand, is not really an epic game, but it's a very short play. The box says that it's 30 to 45 minutes, and I think that is pretty accurate. It is for two players, and the box says it's for ages 13 and up. You know, and the reason why it's 13 and up might just be the text on the cards being a little bit more complicated, and you're dealing with political themes, which might just kind of go over the heads of a kid. There's definitely nothing unsavory in there, or any bad language, or anything that would be, you know.
Well, Sarah Palin's in there. Hey!
No comment.
There it is.
All right, so just to read a little bit of flavor text from the rules here, because it's kind of interesting. It says that a modern U.S. presidential campaign is one of the most amazing organizational endeavors ever undertaken by man. In 2008, John McCain and Barack Obama collectively spent $2.4 billion on their efforts to be elected president of the United States. That is more money than the federal government devoted to the Manhattan Project. It is a larger figure than the gross domestic product of 32 countries. You could purchase 3 50-story skyscrapers for the same amount. So when we talk about running a U.S. presidential campaign, we're really referring to something akin to running a Fortune 500 company. The most remarkable thing is, a campaign manager must take this enterprise from literally nothing to these enormous heights in about a year's time. It's a grueling job with enormous pressure and a lot to juggle. You have the candidate, the media, volunteers in every state, the campaign staff, the internet, attack ads, campaign consultants, pollsters, proxies, and political problems of every conceivable stripe. And at the end of the day, what is your reward? If you win, you get the problems of governance. If you lose, you earn your party's scorn and the inevitable finger-pointing that follows. In Campaign Manager 2008, we invite you to undertake this thankless task by assuming the role of the campaign manager for either Barack Obama or John McCain. Your candidate is relying on you to develop a campaign strategy and then go on to manage this enormous endeavor successfully. You will consider a variety of different tactics and strategies available to you, crafting a personal campaign plan by selecting a unique combination of techniques aimed squarely at pummeling your opponent. Of course, that's just what your opponent intends to do to you. So that's basically the idea of the game here. For any of you who live in the United States here, for the last couple of years, you probably remember the heated presidential election of 2008 between Obama and McCain. And, of course, we know what the outcome ended up being with Obama becoming president. But this gives you the opportunity to possibly rewrite history by playing things a little bit differently and being a good campaign manager. And so in this game, the idea is that each of these candidates have already locked up a certain number of states. And they already have a certain number of electoral votes in the can, if you will. And then what you're trying to do is compete for these last 20 states that they consider sort of battleground states. Each of these states are going to be represented by large sort of tiles that are look like about the size of giant index cards. And they're real thick cardboard. And you're going to be placing tokens onto the board by playing cards that are going to change influence, change voting blocks and things like that, with the hopes of gaining enough voter support to be able to claim that state and its electoral votes. And so that's sort of how the game works. It's all done by a sort of a card-driven mechanic, and where you build a campaign strategy deck. So each player will get a campaign strategy deck, one for Obama, one for McCain, that consists of 45 cards. And the first part, the thing that you're going to do is to draft cards to create your deck for this game. There's 45 total cards, but you're only going to use 15 of them in the game. And so what you would do is take the top three cards from your deck, you'll pick one of them, and then discard the other two. You'll take the next three, pick one, discard the other two. So you continue this until you get 15 cards in your hand that you're going to be using for your campaign strategy deck. For an initial game, they have some sort of, a starter deck for you to use where there's a star at the bottom of the card. So, you can start off with those 15 cards and then do the card drafting mechanic later on in future games. I thought that was kind of a cool idea. So you're each going to get that. You're each going to get a set of tokens called support markers. They're little wooden discs. Red ones for Obama. That's backwards. Red ones for McCain and blue ones for Obama. You're also going to get a board that's called the Going Negative Results Chart. In this game, you have the opportunity to go negative in your campaign, which might cause you some problems and have some consequences. So in addition to having that results chart for going negative, you also have a six-sided die called the Going Negative Die. Then you're also going to have some markers, these little triangular markers called issue markers. At any time in the game, there are going to be four states that are on the table. And each of those states is going to have an issues track on it. The idea in this game is going to be that there's two main issues that are prevalent in this campaign. And if you remember from the 2008 presidential campaign, the two main issues really were defense and the economy. You know, things regarding the war in Iraq and also things with the economic recession. So those are the two issues that you're going to be kind of battling out for. So the track has four spaces on it. And then this little triangle will mark which issue is the most important, which one is the majority issue and the minority issue, and different cards will allow you to move these things up to determine which issue is considered the most important to this state. And then you're also going to have in each state what are called key demographics. So each state will have two demographics. So for example, in the state of New Jersey, the two demographics listed are Clinton Democrats and Jewish conservatives. And so there'll be a box for each one of those, and one is sort of the default key demographic. You'll put the little cube onto that area. There'll be cards played later that might allow you to change the key demographic. And there's also cards that will give you advantages if the key demographic in a state is a particular thing. So you're going to want to do that. You're also going to get a deck of breaking news cards from that great news organization, ZNN. Thank you, Z-Man Games. and these are going to be events that will be played that will change the outcome of certain things. Then you also have a scoring track. I thought this was kind of a clever idea. I'm not sure how well it's necessarily executed, but the idea being that at the beginning of the game, McCain has already sewn up 155 votes and Obama 157. And then you're going to have, it kind of looks like a little racetrack sort of a thing. And then you have these little cardboard tokens that represent the number of electoral votes for each of the battleground states. So like Florida's is really big and then New Hampshire's is really small.
Good for your day.
the fear die. And so as you claim these states and get those electoral votes, you'll add this to your scoring track so you can sort of visually see how far ahead you are. Unlike 1960, the making of the president, where you don't really get to find out the outcome of things until the very end and you count up all the votes, here you're going to claim a state and you will gain those votes immediately. And then you'll, you know, whoever is able to get to that past that 270 vote mark first is going to be the winner. So those are all the components in the game. What you're going to do is you're going to set up the game with these four states out on the table in front of you, and you'll put all the little tokens in the right places. And then you're going to start off by playing cards. On your turn, you can do one of two things. You can either play a card from your hand, or you can draw a card from the deck. One, but not both. So so that there's a little bit of a balance as to when do you want to draw cards and when do you want to play them. So the cards themselves are just going to have some kind of an event or some kind of action that you can take on them. And that will usually cause you to have to either change the key demographic in a state, change or move the issue track one way or the other in a state, or it can cause you to add support markers to the cards to gain voters. So on those state cards, I mentioned that there's an issue track and then there's the key demographics. And then at the top and the bottom of the card, the cardboard card, there's a set of voting circles, I guess. And they start off in certain colors. So again, using New Jersey as an example, because it's in the manual. at the very top, which is aligned up with the defense issue, you have four circles. And there's a red circle, a blue circle, and two white circles. Then at the bottom of the card, which is lined up with the economy issue, you have a red circle, two blue circles, and one white circle. Red, of course, stands for voters that are already aligned with McCain. Blue, already aligned with Obama. The white ones are considered undecided voters. So on your turn, if you play a card that will allow you to add support to a particular state, then you can do that in one of a couple of different ways. If there's an undecided voter, a white space, then you can place one of your support markers on top of that, which will claim it for you. If you have a if you're a McCain, for example, and you want to place your token onto a blue circle, then that will change from blue to red, and then you will claim that. Also, if someone has placed one of their colored tokens onto your space, then you can choose to remove it. So, anything that's going to cause you to go from red to blue, or blue to red, or white to either red or blue is what you would do. And this is how you're adding voter support. So the game is just going to continue. You're going to play these cards, and they're very themey cards. I'll go ahead and say that that's the kind of a real fun thing about the game, is that the names of the cards really go along with things that happen in the campaign. So, you know, for example, there's a card in the Obama deck called McCain, out of touch, out of ideas, something that Obama said during the campaign. And in each of these cards, there's a little area in the middle where it looks like someone's pasted a sticky note onto the card. And it's supposed to be like you're the campaign manager and you're giving advice, or you're making notes for yourself as to what you need to do. So like for that card, it says he needs to ask his staff how many houses he has. Work this into an ad.
I thought those were clever. Yeah. Those were fun to read.
So you really feel like this is actually a sort of a campaign manager behind the scenes trying to find the best strategy. So, you know, that's an example there. If you happen to play a card that's considered like an attack card, so that card, McCain, out of control, or out of touch, out of ideas. out of touch, out of ideas, would be considered going negative. Then that card is going to have a little symbol for it, of the going negative die on it. So you'll do whatever the card says, which will give you some kind of a big benefit. But then the consequence for going negative is you'll roll that D6, then you'll read from the going negative chart. And that whatever benefit is on that chart will go to your opponent. So your opponent will get a benefit for you having gone negative. And there's actually a 1 out of 6 chance that nothing would happen. I think if you roll a 6, there's no effect. So but there's a risk there. So how do you claim states?
How do you claim states?
I'm glad you asked that, Cody.
Thanks.
So if at any time all of the voters on the majority issue side of a state are in support of a single candidate, then that player immediately wins the state. So the issues are going to move up and down on this track. As I mentioned, that there's four spaces, and they keep it as a triangle, so it looks like it's an arrow pointing up for two spaces and an arrow pointing down for two spaces. If you're in the top half, then that top issue of defense is considered the majority issue in the state. And if you're in the bottom half, then the economy is considered the majority issue of the state. So if you ever are able to claim all of the circles on the side that's the majority issue, then you'll claim that state. So sometimes you'll have all the voters that you need for a particular state, but the issue is just not in the majority. So you have to try to play cards that will move that issue track up to where your issue is in the majority, so then you can claim the state. So those are the kind of the push and pull of the game. But once you're able to do that, then you're going to claim the state. And when you claim the state, you're going to pull that card off the board, and you'll immediately get the electoral votes for that particular state, and you'll put that onto the scoring track. Then you're going to select a different state, and so you'll just basically go into the stack of states and pick whichever one you want and put it out there. And then the last thing that's going to happen is you're going to draw one of these breaking news cards from the ZNN deck, and that'll be some kind of thing that will affect the state that just got put out on the board. It might cause the issue to move or for voters to change or something like that, or key demographics. Now there's one interesting card in each of the decks called a media support card. And that's a card that you play out in front of you. If you happen to have that media support card out in front of you, then you get to decide which state is affected by that breaking news card. It doesn't have to be the one that just came out. It could be any of the states. And so then the play will continue, and you just will draw cards. And if you run out of your deck, like I said, it's only 15 cards, you're going to shuffle up your discard pile and start again. So that is the whole play of the game. The game will end when someone has claimed more than 270 votes. There is a condition where it can end up being 270 to 269. That would be nearly a tie. And this says that... both would have 269. Sorry. And the rules say that in the event that the game ends with neither player having reached the necessary 270 votes, the election is too close to call. While in real life, this would only be the beginning of a long adventure in recounts and Supreme Court deliberations, for game purposes, the players should consider this rare eventuality a draw. And the game is such a short game that if you happen to have that, you would probably just say, let's play again and see how it turns out. So
I wish McCain didn't always cross the aisle or give the Democrats his trademark smile. But guess what? Johnny McCain is the best we've got. Oh, yeah, I'm voting for John McCain. Oh, yeah, I'm voting for John McCain. Oh, yeah. I'm voting for John McCain. Vote, 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 vote for John McCain. For
those are the basics of Campaign Manager 2008. And Cody, what did you think of this game?
I have to say it's been long documented that I don't like 1960. I don't like it. It's not that I don't like it because of theme, because I'm a big history buff. I'm a big political buff. So it scratches that itch, but I just thought it was fiddly. There's a lot going on. I didn't really care for it. This one's nicer because it's a little more streamlined. It's a really quick play. It's not as detailed as I thought. It doesn't have as much going on.
Right.
You know, I thought that was neat. The timeliness is kind of cool of it because, you know, this stuff only happened, you know, year and a half ago. So
yeah,
that's pretty neat. I have to say it. I can kind of see the Kinesia theme. All I know, it's not a Reiner game, but I kind of see where they tacked on this the theme to the mechanic a little bit.
Right.
It's not terrible. It's not a game breaker or anything. It's not like Battle Line or something like that. But I can kind of see that a little bit. But to me, the game is it's interesting enough. It's a fun little kind of political game. The one beef I would have is what I think is really cool with 1960 is the cards, you know, that have stuff that happened with the 1960 election.
Uh-huh.
That seems to really influence that game more than this. Yeah, they may have a card that says "Drill, baby, drill," but to me, that doesn't equate to, you know, what would really happen after that thing. You know, it just seems like they threw up a buzzword from the campaign, but then it might be like draw two cards. It's like, well, what is that? What does that have to do with that? You know, that's my only complaint with it. I'm pleased at how quick a game it is. It's a nice light strategy game. And the political theme I think is just gravy. You know, I think it's a fun little game. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Cool. It's interesting that you mentioned the whole thing about it seeming like the theme was pasted over it a little bit,
because
at the bottom of the credits and acknowledgments, the designers mention says the authors would like to dedicate this game to the memory of Franz Benno DeLong, a wonderful game designer who left us far too soon. I think he just passed away in the last couple of years. Campaign Manager 2008 was inspired by an unpublished design of his, which used a similar two-track support mechanism. Mm. So very, very likely that might have been the case, that they just took those mechanics and put the theme on there. As is also well documented on this podcast, I'm a huge fan of 1960. Sure. It is my number two game, and you know, I kind of, because Dominion is quicker, that's my number one game. But
and you can find people to play
it. I can find people to play it with, but if that were to change, I would say 1960 might end up being my favorite game of all time. But I see exactly what you're saying, that this game, there's less to do. There's less variables to change. And so it's much more difficult to tie the theme into those particular mechanics. 1960 is phenomenal because of the fact that if you're playing a card that's about civil rights or something, you know, and you're gaining support in the South, and it's just very much a link to that map and to things that were going on in that time period. This has a lot less of that, but at the same time, it's short and it's easy to grasp. It's not too difficult to explain this. I know my 15-minute explanation of the rules might have left you more confused, but I think that it's actually a pretty easy game to pick up, and there's just less going on. So I really enjoyed it. I love the political theme. The game is very well made component wise. All the cards have great artwork and photographs from the election. And I love it because I think it's a game that I'm going to keep for a long time, if for no other reason than, I mean, it'll look probably antiquated in 20 years. You know, it's like, 2008, you know. But I'm going to keep it anyway because I think it really takes a really cool snapshot of history, which most games don't do that. You know, 1960 is another one that takes a really good snapshot of history. So I liked it. So, Cody, Campaign Manager 2008, buy, try, or deny?
It's going to be a try for me. Okay. It's going to be a solid try, a try plus, if you will. I think I enjoy it quite a bit. This is a game I could buy. I could play quite often and have a lot of fun with it. I just think some people, if you don't have an interest in politics or history, I think you will lose something from the game. I think it'll be harder to appreciate it as just a straight strategy game.
I agree.
Me, since I really like the politics and the history, that just makes me enjoy it more. You know, if this were rethemed to something else, it may not be as fun. It is pretty simplistic. It's straightforward, which isn't a bad thing. But like I said, some of the cards don't seem like they do. You know, like I mentioned, Drill Baby Drill. You know,
right?
It's a fun game. It scratches a good itch, and it is, like you said, a nice snapshot of history there. So it's a try plus. Definitely give it a try, but if with the caveat, if you are a political buff or history buff, I might go ahead and pick this up. So I covered about every base but deny there, I think.
You did. Well done.
Thank you. All right, John, Campaign Manager 2008, buy, try, or deny?
It's a buy for me, of course. Yeah. One reason that I didn't bring this up is that the retail price of this game is only $30, and it's
a good value.
While it's not a big box board game, it does have some board game-like components to it. It's not just a card game. It's got a lot of little pieces to it. And the components are all, like I said, all very well done, and the artwork is very well done. I just think it's great, and I just think it's fantastic. So I would give this one a definite buy. Pick it up, Campaign Manager 2008.
All right, so we had a buy and a try plus.
Try plus or buy.
With an option to buy.
Yeah. That's Campaign Manager 2008.
All right, well, what do you say we close out the show?
Let's do it. Well, y'all the people them need. Them a shout out Barack Obama, Barack Obama, Barack Obama, hoy, hoy. Them say Barack Obama, Barack Obama, Barack Obama, hoy, hoy. Now you can hear it in the morning, Obama. And you can hear it in the evening, Obama. Black man and white woman shouting, Obama. Them in the groove and them is moving, Obama. And you can hear them saying Barack Obama. All right, as always, we thank you for listening to Game On with Cody and John. You can find us on the web at gameonpodcast.com. There you can subscribe and get the latest updates, whether it be new episodes, written reviews, any other news that is fit to virtually print. That's right. And we keep saying that we're going to put a bunch of written reviews. We haven't really done that yet, but you know, if we keep saying it, then maybe we'll aspire to do a little bit more of the written reviews.
Perhaps.
But we can definitely bring you some great podcast content every 2 weeks. We also want to mention that on our website, we have our donation button, mm-hmm. which has been kind of sequestered for the last couple of months to help with the Tom Vassell fundraiser. Now that that's over with, we are turning those reins back over to us as far as the donation button. We really do appreciate any support that you can give us to keep our show running and the expenses that go along with that. Also helps us to purchase games to be able to review on the show, and we know that you guys enjoy those. So just click on that, and it'd be just a little PayPal transaction, and we'd really appreciate it.
And if you'd like to write us, please do so at the Game On Inbox.
That's at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Whether it's just any game news or questions, GM Academy questions, thoughts on our group therapy discussion, or anything else, we would love to hear from you. And getting mail from you guys is one of the best parts of the job.
It is maybe the best part.
Maybe
of the job.
Best.
Yep. We'd also invite you to check out our guild on BoardGameGeek and this online community that's sort of set up by BoardGameGeek. We're Guild 576. You can also just search for us to find us. And I think we're up to like 215 members in the guild. That's
cool.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And still a small fraction of our listeners, but we'd encourage you to go and check it out. We've got an image gallery, some forums there, another good way to interact with other
game
listeners.
You can see John's painted War Jacks.
You can, yeah. I got pictures of theirs. And once Cody finishes his for Kador, we're going to have to put those up there too.
It will not look as good, but they will be red at least.
Whatever.
And we are Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. You can find our show and other great shows at pulpgamer.com.
Well, join us in 2 weeks where we're going to be tackling a gigantic game from a Fantasy Flight. We're always about the new hotness.
That's right.
And we're going to be taking a look at Rune Wars. And one thing we want to mention is, starting with next episode, we're going to be making some changes to how we do our game reviews. You know, we've done 38 episodes now, and we've done 38 buy, try, or denies. And we're thinking that we just want to make some changes and maybe retire the buy, try, or deny model and go with a different model for reviews that we think you guys are really going to like.
Absolutely.
So stay tuned for that, and Rune Wars will be our first review with that new model. And we'll also have lots of other great discussion and news and great gaming stuff for you.
Clowns and fireworks
and puppies and all kinds of good stuff. So until then,
game on. Now let's instead go to Buy, Try, or Deny, where we will talk about two people that maybe didn't want to hug it out. Mr.'s O'Kane and...
O'Kane and...
Oh, Mr. O'Kane!
O'Kane and McBama.
Oh, we kind of went off the rails there. Senators O'Bane. Oh, God, dude.
O'Kane. Do a line of O'Kane.